Radio Ghana. A very good evening and welcome to Behind the News, our news and current affairs program, which examines issues from the perspective of newsmakers and experts. My name is Ibrahim Opon Kwarteng, and tonight, new basket to calculate monthly inflationary figures in the oven. What products or services will be in this new food basket by the Ghana Statistical Service? Government begins daily media briefing at the Flagstaff House in Accra. We take a look at this new initiative by government to sell its programs and policies to the people. And we take our usual trip to the Supreme Court, where the bench threw out an application by third respondents to cross-examine additional witnesses from petitioners. And now to our very first story. The 2012 election was bitterly fought on all fronts. In other words, the policies and programs of the parties as captured in their manifestos were subjected to thorough scrutiny and sometimes subjected to ridicule and attacks. Some state institutions did not escape the attacks of politicians or representatives of the parties. One such state institution is the Ghana Statistical Service, GSS, which came at the barrage of attacks anytime it released the inflation figures for the month. The opposition argued that the figures did not reflect the situation on the ground and even went to the extent of accusing the GSS of doing propaganda for government, to which the GSS denied vehemently. The GSS has signaled its intention to use a new basket to calculate the monthly inflationary figures. So what future inflationary figures should we look forward to, and how will the new basket affect the figures? Let us seek some clarification from the Acting Deputy Government Statistician and Operations Director of the GSS, Ajimendria, who has joined us on telephone. Mr. Ajimendria, you're welcome to Behind the News.
Thank you.
Right. So when we talk of basket for calculating inflation, what exactly is being referred to as basket?
Thank you very much. The basket is nothing but the different items of goods and services which consumers on average spend, use their income to spend on. So the various items, if I normally, they are grouped into about 12 categories. So these items, which on average people spend their incomes on, is what we refer to as the basket.
Right, so this is not an ordinary basket, the baskets that we know and which we carry to the market. But, Mr. Ajimendria, what is this new basket that the organization is talking about? I'm talking about the new basket.
Okay. If, currently, the items that we measure the price over the time, they are 242. And the new one, when we finish the whole exercise, this will be made up of 267. So there is an increase over what we are currently measuring the price.
Right. So, and how will it affect the inflation figures?
The inflation figures, it will depend on the weight, the relative importance of the new items which are being brought on board. That the relative importance of this item is what we refer to as the weight. So it is too early to talk about how this will affect the inflation figure, because inflation figures, the inflation naturally is a measure of how prices, the rate at which prices are changing. So even if the new items come on board and the prices are not increasing, changing so fast, and the prices are not changing so fast, because price can increase, it can increase very slow, or it can increase very rapid, or it can even be the same, no increase. I mean, we're talking about the general price. So it will depend after we measure. In fact, we have taken a whole 12 months to measure this. We started from January last year. Those are the items in the new basket. We have been monitoring the prices over the 12 months, because we need to have enough data points to calculate the CPI, that's consumer price index, from which we get the inflation. So this is what I can say for now.
It depends
on how the prices are changing.
Right. And how are you going to calculate communication and then transportation?
Well, if it's communication, the new, which is coming on board, even before then, some aspects of communication were corrected. But it's just that with the coming on board of many ICT items and other things, now we have enough data on them. So here again, if you take the communication, it's not made up of only finished phone calls. Because for the phone calls, then in that case, I would say the prices, once they are fixed by the telecom company, then the prices will not change. Because from last year, let's say January, if a unit price of making a call is say 9 pesos per minute, you and I know that from that time, depending on the telecom provider we are talking about, to date, the price has remained the same. So long as the price remains the same, then there's no inflation. But I'm saying that in terms of communication or ICT, it's not only the phone calls, but the means of making the call, like the phone themselves, the cell phones, to be measured. We selected some few that we measure the price. So there also, it depends on how those we have selected the prices are changed. But then you made mention of transport. For transport, many things go into transportation. And already, as you are aware, from February, I think around 18th of February, fuel prices changed. And already this has even been reflected from the April, from the March and April inflation figures that we released. And those ones are determined by the utility regulating body. And not only that, when we talk of also transport, other items also going into transport, like spare parts and that. So all this, it will depend. For that's why we have already been measuring it. So it's not a new thing that we are bringing on board. So that's what I can say.
Right. Mr. Ajimadri, some will say you are altering the basket because of some criticisms of the past as to how you have been doing the calculation. Has this in any way contributed to this new decision?
Normally, baskets are selected after an expenditure has been undertaken. So we don't just think the basket. The current consumer price index we are operating is based on a market survey we undertook in 1998-99, where we used 12 months, visited, selected households, and monitored their expenditure pattern. Out from that, we came with what we are currently operating, where the 242, with a base year of 202. Now, the new basket, the base, we are not only bringing on board new items, but we are also shifting the base. So, when we finish this, the base will be shifted from 202 to 212.
Right.
So, this new base we are talking about will be based on an expenditure saving we undertook in 205 and 206. That also took 12 months to undertake the exercise. So that is how we go about getting the weight and then the items we put in the basket.
Right.
So this one is based on a survey we undertook in 205 and 206. And
right.
I want to tell listeners that the current base, remember I said the survey was undertaken in 1998-99. But the rebasing took place in 202. So from 99 to 202, it was about 5 years. So this one too, the survey was undertaken in 205, 206. When you finish with the survey, it takes time to undertake the data processing and other things. When you finish, then you monitor sometimes, then you start the processing of selecting the items which will go into the basket. It takes some time to finish this exercise. Then when you have selected the items, then you measure those you have, the items you have selected, then you measure their prices over a period of 12 months. So the measurement of this new basket, that exercise started January 2012, when that hula baru had not started. Remember, the attack on the figure DSS release was in May. May last year. That time, we had already started measuring the prices we had already selected. So then, trying to come out with this new piece is not because the figures were disputed in May last year. No, that's not the case.
Right, Mr. Ajimedua, so
has already started the exercise.
So it has a strong historical base, and that it is not a direct response to criticism by some leading members of the opposition that the basket you were employing or you were using wasn't the right basket. But then hold on briefly for us whilst we go to Dr. Joe Abbey on the line for his thoughts on the same issue. Dr. Abbey, you are welcome to Behind the News. Hello? We understand Dr. Abbey is yet to be on the line. So let's come back to you, Mr. Ajimendua. I was asking a question that there is a strong historical base because you alluded to, is it 1998 or so, and that it is not in response to criticisms leveled against your institution by some leading members of the opposition before the 2012 elections.
Yeah, precisely, this is what I said. And I want to add that, according to the United Nations Principles of Official Statistics, which we subscribe, everything that we do, we try to be transparent. And for this reason, even this new base, we've tried several times to engage our stakeholders. Like we were trying to call Dr. Abbey. Dr. Abbey is aware of this. Last year, we had some stakeholder meeting where the people from ISE, Bank of Ghana, SEPA, and IE and other stakeholders were all invited, in which we gave them the methodology, how we are going about the whole basket, the item there, why some items were dropped and why some items were brought on board. And together, we discussed, and they also gave their contribution, their input. Before, because we had even wanted to select around 300. Then later, this was pulled down to about 272.
Right.
And eventually, we all settled on 267.
Mr.
Ajimadi, we don't do things alone. We do it with other official statistics producing agencies.
Right. Mr. Ajimadi, don't go yet. We understand, Mr. Dr. Joe Abbey is on the line. Doc, you're welcome.
Yes, thank you very much for having me.
Right. The Ghana Statistical Service says it will now use a new basket to calculate the monthly inflation. Should they have done this long ago, or you think the timing is okay?
I think the timing is okay in the sense that it requires a lot of preparation. What had happened before was that the basket that had been chosen was increasingly becoming heated. You know, you pick these items, and over time, for example, once upon a time you had tape cassettes. Now you're using compact discs and so on. So over time, new products arrive and displace some of the old products. And therefore, when you go to the field to collect your price data, the specifications that you've got there may not have a representation in some of the markets. So it created a lot of problems about so-called zero entries and so on. If your basket stays too long, one of the things we should work in this country for is, instead of within 10 years, we may want to think about changing the basket stay every 5 years. It requires resources for the statistical service to conduct the surveys, which will be able to suggest to us what items the average family is consuming, whose prices we should be tracking. So that is, the timing is dependent. We've crossed the 10-year mark. I'm glad that they finished the work. And as you have said, They've been monitoring the new basket for about a year now, so they're in a position. And people have to understand the technicality of how does the new basket relate to the old basket and so on. And so I'm hoping that they'll put it out and we'll all join to try and, as people say these days, interrogate the data and assure the public that the proper thing has been done. Mm. That is what is important.
Right, Doc, I don't want to muddy you in politics, but why do you think the GSS came under attack, particularly during the election year, anytime it released the inflationary figures?
Well, a number of things were given. From the statistical point of view, there was a question about so-called zero entry, that the Statistical Service produced the database to, I believe it was the Damkwa Institute, and they found that there were some items whose prices seemed to be missing. So there was a question about the so-called, as I said, zero entry into the thing. But when we investigated, our main thing is this, that it is, there are difficulties because the basket was becoming out of date. There was a need to bring the basket closer in line with the current consumption patterns and items than having a basket which was so old that there may be problems about finding the prices of the items in the market. So I felt that the important thing is to encourage the Statistical Service to change the basket and bring the new items in there and monitor these things, and then we can do the changeover and all join in to make sure that the right thing has been done.
Right, Doc. The little economics I know is suspect, but then we were told by our teachers that there is a sort of correlation. It's rather unfortunate. We seem to have lost Dr. Abe. Mr. Ajimendua, I'm sure you are on the line. Hello, Mr. Ajimendua. Yeah, I'm sure you've been listening to Dr. Abe. So let me pose that same question to you.
Okay.
What I'm trying to say is that we understand that there is a sort of correlation between inflation and standard of living. So lower inflation means that definitely price of goods and services would come down, interest rates would come down. But that is not the case in this part of that we experience. And so what could be responsible? And don't you think that could be the reason why a lot of criticism have been leveled against your outfit?
Well, the issue is this. People usually try to confuse price level with changes in price. The two are different.
Mm.
If price, assuming a bottle of, say, water, the price is, say, 1 cedi, and then it goes to 1 cedi 50%, the change in price is 50%. Now, if the price should go to 1 cedi 60%, assuming a bottle of water is the only item consumed in the by all people in the economy, that's why I'm putting this example. 1 cedi 60% definitely is more than 1 cedi 50%. So price has not gone down. But then the rate of change, the change from 1 cedi to 1 cedi 50, that's 50%. I mean 50%. But the change from 1 cedi 50% to 1 cedi 60%, that change is not 50, it will be lower than the 50%. If we do the quick calculation, you may see that maybe it may increase by less than 10%.
Mm.
So if we compare the 10% to say the 50%, then we will say inflation has gone down.
Mm.
Right. Inflation going down does not mean the price has gone down. The price is still increasing, but it is increasing at a decreasing rate. And that is what we call, or we normally say, inflation is going down.
Right.
From English, the word inflation means to make bigger. So the moment you hear the word inflation, it means something is increasing. But the rate, how fast that thing is increasing or how slow that thing is increasing, is what we should let the public know. But the advantage the layman should know is that when we say inflation is going down, what it means is that you can take your time and plan before you buy the things. Unlike the 70s, if you could remember the Karabule era, when prices were not all that stable, they were increasing almost every minute, almost every hour.
Mm.
that one, people could even resort to panic buying because they were not sure the next time taxes would change so fast.
Right.
But if inflation is going down, then at least it puts people's consumers' mind at ease.
Right.
So that they will not do what we call panic buying. They can take their time and plan because they pay expectations. So in simple terms to the ordinary person, this is what I can say for now.
Right, Mr. Ajimendu, I haven't discharged you yet. We understand Dr. Joe Abbey is back on the line. But, Doc, you will come once again.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I'm sorry about this telephone problem.
That's okay, Doc. But I was just receiving a lecture from Mr. Ajimendria on inflation and standard of living, the correlation and between the two. Doc, I want your thoughts on the same subject. Is there a correlation between inflation and standard of living? Because the perception down here is that when inflation is down, then prices of goods and services should automatically go down. But then we don't usually experience that kind of situation. Could you briefly give us something, your view
yes,
on that?
That is correctly a long-standing misinterpretation. I remember around 1979, the graphic came with an editorial. It was then Dr. Fonda, the government statistician, and when the service said that inflation had come down, the editorial was captioned Jackson's Law. And it showed the fact that people misunderstand what inflation really is supposed to be measuring. The only way that an inflation number will signal a lowering, a coming down of price levels will be if the inflation number is negative. If the inflation number is positive, it only says the rate at which prices are rising, underlying rising. So the inflation, if so long as it's positive, it is only telling you whether your cost of living is rising faster or slower. But if it is positive, it means that your cost of living, the buying power of your income is in the marketplace. It's reducing. So we should not say that if somebody says inflation is decreasing, it is the rate at which prices are rising. And as I said, the thing to look out for is if they say inflation is negative. And this happens if you look at the post-harvest period and you look at month to month, you will see instances in which the price level for food, for example, actually fell. If you look typically at June, July, August, we do have a seasonal situation with month by month, food prices fall after the harvest, and you see monthly inflation recorded as negative.
Mm-hmm.
So you must be looking out for whether the sign is negative or positive. If the statistical service says positive, don't be looking for falls in price levels. But let me say this, that I think, frankly, that the way forward that the Statistical Service can help itself is not to get into a lot of these technical discussions in the public. That is to get stakeholders who are also able to interpret the numbers and let us make sure that we can come out of this type of exercise and assure the public that the right thing is being done. Because there were statistical dimensions to the challenge. There were economic dimensions to the challenge. There were labor dimensions to the challenge. When the challenge came, the unions, for example, took the view that they didn't know whatever the Statistical Service may say it is measuring. But the workers were saying that they could not relate what they saw to be happening in their lives with whatever the Statistical Service was coming out.
Mm.
And we didn't help ourselves any when we're talking about inflation coming down when the exchange rate was falling like a piece of lead. So it is up to the Statistical Service itself to do their own internal checks as well. If the city is falling at 17% a year, and you tell me that inflation is falling, I have a problem. So I don't think we want to open this type of debate.
Right.
And then the question was also raised, if inflation is falling, why are interest rates going up? So I think we've gone through this. The important thing is to be looking forward and for all of us to make sure that we are able to satisfy ourselves that in terms of what they have done with the new basket, we will put the credibility issues. I think the Statistical Service will be doing itself a disservice if it just becomes dismissive of the questions of credibility that were raised. You can't just say we have measured the thing. People are challenging, are you doing the right thing? There were even political dimensions that our attention was drawn to because of the fact that people felt that the Statistical Service Board itself was not being accountable. And then when you also have problems about the position of the government statistician, the Statistical Service Board, the government, the Statistical Service itself must understand that there were legitimate questions that were being raised as to whether the board was over-controlling them. So I think we should put those debates behind us and get on with the new basket, assure ourselves that it has been done properly, and be able to see how we can reinterpret whatever it is that has happened. I think a technical discussion like this in open forum doesn't serve the purpose.
Right. Doc, we really appreciate your time with us.
Thank you.
Dr. Joe Abe is Executive Director of the Center for Policy Analysis. Mr. Ajimendria, I am food for thought from Dr. Joe Abe. Your response to that?
Okay. I would like to thank Dr. Abe very much. He has also been a friend of Statistical Service because he has been a former government statistician. He understands our challenges and the interpretation people give to some of the indicators. We are very grateful to him. And like the advice he's given, we will continue to be transparent. There was something formerly we were doing called the statistical literacy. We hope to revisit that one and use that platform to bring on board the public, the media, other stakeholders, and explain our methodology and all that we do, so that people will then appreciate what we do. While they know the methodology and that everything that we do is transparent, I believe that they will begin to take our figures or believe in our figures. So this is what I can do for, I can say for now.
Right, Mr. Ajimendria, we would want to thank you very much for sharing your thoughts with us. Mr. Ajimendria is Acting Deputy Government Statistician and Operations Director of the Ghana Statistical Service. You are listening to Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. We are also live on all our regional networks nationwide. In Accra, we are on Unique 95.7, Ubunu 96.5 in Tema, Radio Central 92.5 in Cape Coast, and then Twin City 94.7 in Takoradi. But let's go to Najagle Agu for some stories.
The new Director General of GBC, Major Albert Donchibi, today met with staff of the corporation to outline his vision. Revenue generation and pensions were some of the issues discussed during the interaction. Major Donchibi was accompanied by some directors of the corporation. He mentioned discipline and cleanliness as important areas he will focus on.
Thank you. And now let's move on to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court today threw out the motion filed by counsel for NDC, Tachu Chikata, and his co-respondents to cross-examine additional witnesses of the NPP on the basis that it will prolong the case. According to His Lordship Justice Atuguba, the court has enough evidence to make a firm decision and will not need extra information from the said witnesses to make a determination of the case. The court's decision may have come as a blow to Mr. Chikata and his co-respondents, who had cited portions of C-174, which states that a person who has sworn an affidavit may be cross-examined and re-examined as necessary to buttress their point. Joining me on the line to analyze the implications of the court's ruling is a lecturer at the Faculty of Law of the University of Ghana, Kisi Ejabin. Mr. Ejabin, you're welcome.
Thank you.
So what do you make of the court's decision to throw out the motion by Mr. Chikata to cross-examine additional witnesses of petitioners?
It appears the court wants to hasten things more because, as they said, it will protract the case, because if all these witnesses come in, then it means they will be cross-examined by all the lawyers for the various respondents.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly that's going to protract the matter. And as they said, this case is really being fought on documentary evidence and affidavit evidence. So ordinarily, you would have had witnesses who have shown some affidavits being called or counsel being allowed to call such witnesses to cross-examine them. But if you look at the way the case is going, one, the nature of the case, and two, how protracted even the first cross-examination has been. I think Dr. Baumia has been in the box for 17 days, if I'm not mistaken. And if all these witnesses are going to be called and taken through such protracted cross-examination, you can't really tell where it's going to go. But whatever they have deposed to, as the court is trying to suggest, is something that can easily be gleaned from the affidavit, and the court can come to a decision based on that. That is to say that bringing them to the court will not, it's inconsequential. That is to say, it will not really affect what they've said one way or the other.
Right. But Mr. Jabin, Mr. Chikata had cited portions of CI 74 that states that a person who has sworn an affidavit may be cross-examined and re-examined as necessary. Wasn't that strong enough to convince his lordship?
That is why I said that ordinarily, a case like that can be made. Ordinarily, a case like that can be made. But maybe, and I'm trying to play the devil's advocate here, maybe he himself has shot himself in the foot by the nature of his cross-examination, because he's cross-examined Dr. Baumia for 11 days running now. So I'm trying to second guess the judges here, what may have informed them. If four more witnesses are going to be called who have sworn on affidavit evidence, the cross-examination of which might not be necessarily germane to what is being discussed now, then put it this way, it would it sends the information out there that, well, if you spend 11 days in cross-examining someone, then maybe if we are to allow you to call four more people in respect of something that is not seriously germane to the issue that we're discussing, or the cross-examination not being that important, if you're going to take 11 days for each other person, do the math. It's going to protract things. And as I said, it looks like he himself shot himself in the foot, because, as I said, ordinarily, the court may have allowed that, because that is what is provided in the constitutional instrument.
Right. But others have argued that the court's explanation that granting the motion will prolong the case is untenable, because it has a tendency of blocking what could have enriched the respondent's case.
Yes, that is what I'm saying. Ordinarily, he would have been allowed to call, because even the CI allows him to do so. And also, in the ordinary course of hearings, you would expect things like that to be done. But once again, I'm trying to be fair to the court in this instance. That is, whatever they put there on the affidavit, if you're going to call them, it is not going to sway it one way or the other. That is to say, whatever they are coming to say, it's not going to change what is on these documents. That is
right.
For instance, one of them is saying in the affidavit that in the Tana North constituency also, parliamentary results in one polling station were nullified by the Electoral Commission based on overvoting. This is a fact that nobody is contesting. The Electoral Commission actually admits that something like that occurred. So it is a fact that is not an issue. That is, it is not disputed that the Electoral Commission actually nullified results in respect of the parliamentary poll in such a constituency. So what are you really going to call the person to come question him on as to what informed the decision of the EC, or what happened at the polling station for the elections to be annulled, when the EC itself is not contesting the fact that it actually went ahead and annulled the results? You see what I'm trying to get at?
Right.
It appears to be unnecessary if you bring such a person like this, if not just to hear him reiterate what he has already written in the affidavit and in respect of facts that are really not an issue. If there was a contest as to, okay, there is still never annulled results in maybe the town or not constance in respect of the parliamentary polls, then you will be calling the person to come and explain himself as to where he got that information from. But if he's only coming to, say, recite what is there, and you don't really have anything to contest him to the contrary, then it appears to be unnecessary to bring such a person. Whatever he said is there. And if it is not an issue, it is not in dispute, you take it on his face.
Right, some of these issues may be a bit complicated and, let me say, technical. But then, will you agree with Mr. Chikata that the petitioners, by objecting to the move, have something to hide? And to quote Mr. Chikata, why will a party who has preferred evidence to the court be so eager to protect them from cross-examination?
Well, everyone has a strategy, and he's within his rights to say so. If you are going to call someone and the person is being blocked to come and explain what he said, objectively, someone can come to that conclusion. But that takes me back again to what I said not too long ago. That you ask yourself, what is the purpose? What is the purpose for which you are bringing this person? If really there are some serious naughty issues and things that are in dispute, which you want to put across to this person to try and test his credibility or otherwise, then you may say that, okay, this person is running away from his own case. As I keep saying, and what I think informed the court's decision, it's simple. What is this person coming to say that will change the course of the case? If the person is coming to say something that will change the course of the case in favor of one party or the other, then it may be a good reason to bring such a person in. But if the person is not going to say anything which is going to change the course of things, that's why I keep going back to it. Is there any dispute that the Electoral Commission annulled some of the results based on overvoting? What is this person coming to say that will change the fact that the Electoral Commission actually annulled the results in some polling stations? When you match it up that way, you realize that
right,
calling this person to come talk may just protract matters.
Right. So what will the ruling have for both sides?
It changes nothing. That's how I see it. It changes nothing. In my opinion, once again, as I keep saying, it was much ado about nothing. It changes nothing because if the person has put it in his affidavit, and which is not contested by the EC itself, that the EC actually annulled results in some polling stations, it doesn't change the fact that it happened, and it doesn't add anything to the fact that it happened. If it happened, it happened. But that is not really, 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 really the issue before the court. The issues before the court are two. One, whether there were irregularities in respect of the December 2012 poll. And if there were irregularities, if there were no irregularities, then we end it there. But if there were irregularities, then the second question comes up. That is to say, do the irregularities impinge on the outcome as announced by the Electoral Commission? If they do, we know where it is going. If they do not, we end it there. So as to whether this person is coming to testify in respect of whether there was some annulment somewhere, it's not too germane to the issue at hand.
Right. Mr. Kisiye Jame, we really appreciate your time with us.
Thank you for having me.
Mr. Kisiye Jame is a law lecturer at the Faculty of Law, University of Ghana. We will be back. And now let's take another story. Depending on which side of the political divide you stand, you will elicit different response. To the government, it is a means to run an open and transparent government, but to others, it is another propaganda tool by the government. The government today started its daily briefing on issues of national concern to bring the public up to speed on government programs. We bring you our correspondent Pascaline Adadevo's report.
The daily press briefing is part of efforts to deepen government public engagement. The fourth pillar of the NDC's manifesto spells out a transparent and accountable governance, and so the platform will also enable government to state its position on critical national issues and clarify misconceptions. On daily basis, the Minister of Information and Media Relations, Mahama Yariga, will address questions from the media on a wide range of issues of national interest. Mr. Yariga said Thursday's cabinet meeting is expected to review the economy for the first quarter of the year. This is aimed at achieving set targets. The minister answered questions on sustainability of the daily media briefing.
Government doesn't intend to use this to set the agenda. The priority of government is to have a well-informed populace that is up to date in terms of what government is doing, and a media that has absolute access to government at all times to ask whatever questions, and then keeping government on its toes in terms of trying to find out what the facts are so that it can be made available to the media.
Issues on the delay of passage of the Right Information Bill and Broadcasting Bill also came to the fore. He said the two bills are currently before Cabinet for onward submission to Parliament.
The President has committed himself to ensuring that the Right Information legislation is passed. That's part of the broader governance initiatives aimed by the President to ensure that there's openness, there's no secrecy, unnecessary secrecy in governance.
He also looked at the energy situation so far and efforts put in by government.
The reports that I am receiving from communities and citizens generally is that the situation has improved significantly. We still have one or two or a few instances where there are reported cases of people not having electricity or the lights going off frequently, but there are also other things that we should look at. Even before the energy issue, there were major challenges with distribution lines and etc. And some of those issues still exist beyond just the issue of generation. But the indications are that the situation has improved significantly, and we want to wait for a while and then do a general assessment before we come out strongly on the position.
The Minister of Information and Media Relations, Mahama Yariga, stated that with time, changes will be made on how to structure the briefing, and this will take into consideration whether the outside press should be invited.
That was Pascaline Adadevo's report. Nana Komia is a former Minister of Information under the Kufuor administration, and he has joined us on the line. Nana, I hope you are doing well.
Yes, sir.
Good. Innovative means to propagate government policies, isn't it?
Oh, it is not a new thing. It is not a new thing at all. So it's just continuing a program that has already been there, and that is worthwhile. I mean, when I remember when I was working at the Ministry of Information, we had the same thing, but we did it on a weekly basis, every Tuesday. And I remember GTV, GBC will come and carry it live at the Ministry of Information. So we had it once a week. There was Mr. Kwabena Jepon, who was at the office of the press secretary to the president. He was also doing daily press briefings at the castle with a castle press call, and that was strictly on the itinerary and activities and matters related to the presidency. But then at the Ministry of Information, we were doing weekly media briefings on matters relating to the general government machinery. So it is not a new thing, but it's a good thing. Any activity that deepens public engagement by the government is good. So we are happy with it. It will serve as a single clearinghouse where issues, pending issues, can be discussed between the government and the media, and by extension the general public. So it is very good. But we have one or two reservations. I don't know what exactly it is, because it is being held at the presidency. One would have thought that it would be dealing with issues about the presidency, with the president's schedule, the president's itinerary, the president's activities, and so on. And also because it is with the presidential press corps. But when you read the statements and you listen to various pronouncements, it looks like it's actually for the entire government machinery. And if it's for the entire government machinery, then you don't limit it to the presidential press corps. And also, the venue, the better venue for it will be the Ministry of Information. It is the Ministry of Information which is the central government agency for disseminating information. That is where you have trained professionals in the Information Services Department with a whole directorate. That is where you have staff to support the public engagement activities of government. We have a modern press conference center at that ministry, and so on. So it is the main government agency responsible for public engagement. So if it's about the information about the general government machinery, I would have thought that the better place for it would be the Ministry of Information and not the Office of the President. So strictly, the Presidential Press Corps is to cover activities of the President. And if you're having briefings to the Presidential Press Corps, one would think that those briefings will be about the activities of the presidency. If it's about the activities of the general government machinery, which may include the presidency, it is better to just hold it at the Ministry of Information. What it is now is that now the Information Services Department and all of those professionals will have to travel to the presidency and then do their work and then travel back, which is totally unnecessary. Mm. My second reservation is about the frequency. I would advise that they start with maybe a weekly brief, or maybe a bi-weekly, like two times a week, let's say Tuesdays and Thursdays. And then as we go on and you find it necessary to maybe hold an extra one, you do it. When you commit yourself to a daily brief, you are not careful if there are not major issues that concern the public, and this briefing will lose steam. It will lose any excitement, and it will lose value. But if you do it twice a week to start with, then you can be sure that you can get a lot of a substantial quantity of issues to deal with. If the whole Minister for Information and the ISD will go to the Office of the Presidency to talk about some issue for 10 minutes, then we are not, maximizing the potential that we have. But so I would have advised, or I would have wished that they started with two times a week, and then if there was a need to do an extra brief, they can always do it. But when you commit to a daily, something, you will find out that some days you go there and really there's nothing more interesting to talk about, and you just end up just repeating the whole stuff, which then would threaten the importance of the whole exercise.
Right.
Now, I also wish that they complement it, since there is public engagement. The Freedom of Information Bill is very crucial in this matter of making government more transparent and allowing the media the kind of space to find information and disseminate information. So this should go hand in hand with genuine efforts to pass the Freedom of Information Bill. And also, there are burning issues on which we've had not much transparency. The PPPs, for example, have excited the public. You don't get any major information on it. Now, some of them, you've had them becoming issues of derision. Somebody will say, I confirm, and all of that, because there's not much transparency in it. So these are issues that should be tackled very quickly, especially the passage of the Freedom of Information to
right.
make this thing more meaningful.
Right, Nana, I just got a text message that says that this is the first time Nana Akumia is admitting positives from his political opponent. But why have some members of your party described the move as propagandist?
Describing it as propagandist would be premature, because the thing hasn't started. So let's start, and then we'll see how it goes. If it's propagandist, all of us will see. And, you know, it will lose value very, very quickly. But if it's just going to be straightforward, insightful information about government activities on issues that concern the public, we would see it. And if it's about propaganda too, we would see it very quickly. So it's a bit premature now. We would have to see how it goes.
Right. But do you see the daily press briefing coming up against the election petition case?
Oh, well, I am sure at the back of their minds, they would like to do something that would at least reduce the space that a petition occupies. And I'm sure if they're able to achieve that, they'll be quite happy. Public engagement is a legitimate exercise, but I'm sure the government will be happy if this public engagement also gets the effect of reducing the space for the petition. But that one is not going to happen. The petition is of so much interest to Ghanaians that short of discovering oil in the quantities bigger than Saudi Arabia, I don't see what else will be able to take the minds of Ghanaians from the petition. So even though nobody would admit it, I'm sure at the back of their minds they are hoping for that, but it's not going to happen.
Right, Nana, we would want to thank you very much for sharing your thoughts with us.
Thank you too, sir. Have a good night.
Right. Now let us seek the views of the Deputy Executive Director of the Media Foundation for West Africa, Suleimana Brahima. Mr. Brahima, you're welcome to Behind the News.
Thank you very much and good evening.
Right. So how significant is this daily briefing?
Well, first of all, let me say that it's significant in the sense that government is recognizing the importance of information sharing for transparency and accountability in governance. But I'm of the view, just as Nana Akumia touched on it, that a true and precise commitment to transparency and accountability in governance should reflect in government's commitment to having in place a legislation that empowers citizens to access the information they critically need, rather than determining for citizens what information government want them to hear. So essentially what I'm saying is that it is important to empower citizens to actually access and use the information that they need, rather than determining what information that government wants citizens to hear. And that is why I think that some people would describe it as being propagandist. But beyond that, I also share in the view that having it as a daily affair may be quite difficult to manage, especially if the government or the communication machinery of government is not really prepared with its crisis communication strategies. Because, you know, having a daily affair means that government is going to put out there a lot of information, and therefore there's going to also be a lot of analysis of government information, a lot of analysis on government communication, and research institutions who would now have the basis and data to be able to track pronouncements of government and know periodically whether certain things that are said are being done or not. And also, I think that the media would have to be quite careful in order not to be seen as actually brandishing government information and ultimately becoming tools of government propaganda, particularly the state-owned media. You know, I mean, the breeze that I listened to when your tape was being played about today's session was about, you know, what government, the cabinet meeting, what it is doing today. And, I mean, the ordinary things that I think it's not too difficult for government to communicate. And if it is this is the kind of information that the media will be putting out there, that government says yesterday's cabinet meeting was about assessing the economy and so on and so forth, I think these are not the most important and salient kinds of or pieces of information that citizens require. and therefore the media will have to be careful. And as I said, I think that government information machinery would have to also be prepared with this crisis communication strategies, because a lot of things are likely to be going wrong.
Right, so let's look at sustainability. Do you foresee it as sustainable daily? As you said, it's going to put a lot of workload on government.
Well, government is big, and I think that depending on the strategy, it is possible, because if, for example, they decide that they are going to be focusing ministry by ministry, department by department, and therefore today we are looking at the Ministry of Agric and whatever government interventions there are in that ministry, and tomorrow is about foreign affairs and government foreign relations or Ghana's foreign policy, and the next day is about defense and security issues. I think it is possible. But as I said, the question is whether the information that will be put out there would be the kind of information that is helpful for citizens, the kind of information that citizens require, or it will be the kind of information that government wants citizens to hear.
Right, Mr. Brahma, but wouldn't it be a duplication of Meet the Press?
Well, I'm not too sure whether they've made it clear that Meet the Press series is going to continue alongside what is being done. But again, it's all about strategy. If the Meet the Press series is going to feature the various sector ministers addressing the press directly and answering questions, that is possible. So it's all about the strategies that they intend to use.
Right. We appreciate your time with us.
Thank you very much.
Suleiman Abraima is Deputy Executive Director of the Media Foundation for West Africa. So that's how we say good night on today's edition of the program. We are back same time tomorrow. Our producers have been Edmond Tete, Bright Agama, Christopher Siedu, and Felix Kofi, with our technician Isaac Yao Edu. My name is Ibrahim Opon Kwarteng. Stay blessed.